VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel launched dozens more airstrikes into neighboring Syria over the weekend. VOA's Arash Arvasadi has more.
The Israeli military launched hundreds of airstrikes into Syria in the week that passed since the fall of President Bashar al-Assad's regime. Israel says the strikes, targeting strategic weapons and military infrastructure, are essential for its security, so rebel groups cannot use them. Rebel chief and de facto Syrian leader Ahmed al-Shara, formerly known as Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, calls that a false pretext. But he adds his group, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, has no interest in engaging in a new conflict. The focus instead, he says, is on rebuilding the nation. The United States and other governments have designated HTS as a terrorist organization. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made an unannounced trip to the region this week and discussed the future of Syria. The European Union will meet this week to discuss engagement with Syria and the country's rebuilding. Arash Arvasadi, VOA News.
South Korea's acting president, Han Duck-soo, moved on Sunday to reassure the country's allies in calm financial markets a day after President Yoon Suk-yeol was impeached and suspended from his duties over a martial law attempt. Reuters correspondent Diane To reports.
Yoon has been suspended from his presidential duties since Saturday's vote. He's also under criminal investigation over the martial law order. Han, a longtime technocrat who was Yoon's prime minister, is now trying to undo the political crisis as acting president. On Sunday, he spoke with U.S. President Joe Biden by phone, according to the White House and Han's office.
Reuters correspondent Diane To. This is VOA News. Officials said on Sunday that several hundred people, maybe even thousands, may have been killed by Cyclone Chido in the French archipelago of Mayotte in the Indian Ocean. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Cyclone Chido swept through Mayotte overnight, according to the French Meteorological Administration. The forecaster said the storm damaged makeshift housing, government buildings, and a hospital, adding it was the strongest storm in more than 90 years to hit the islands. Mayotte's islands have been a focal point for illegal immigration from nearby Comoros. In recent decades, thousands have attempted to cross from Comoros on the east coast of Africa to Mayotte, which has a higher standard of living and access to the French welfare system. According to the French Interior Ministry, over 100,000 undocumented migrants live in Mayotte. Some 77% of the people in Mayotte live below the French poverty line. The cyclone went on to hit northern Mozambique on Sunday.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. The head of Russia's Chechnya said on Sunday a Ukrainian drone struck a campus belonging to Russia's National Guard as Kyiv continues pushback after a mass air attack from Moscow. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Footage on social media showed a drone swooping low over the Chechen capital, Grozny, before exploding. No casualties were reported. Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov pledged revenge on Ukrainian forces and said he had ordered a missile strike against military facilities in Kharkiv in retaliation for the attack. The claim could not be independently verified. I'm Karen Chamas.
The leader of the U.S. Senate wants to use advanced technology to identify drones in the New York, New Jersey area. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Amidst the fear and bewilderment about drones buzzing over parts of New York and New Jersey, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer urging the feds to use the Robin radar systems for its advanced 360-degree technology that also tracks drones back to a landing spot.
If you see a drone in your air over your home, you should not have to shake an eight ball to see what it is. There ought to be better technology, and there is. We need that technology here.
Schumer also says he's working to pass a bill to give local law enforcement more tools. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said Sunday they have the power to incapacitate drones, but need those authorities expanded, and continues to say the drones don't appear to be linked to foreign governments. Julie Walker, New York.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, December 16, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS has given Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger 6 months to reconsider their decision to leave the regional bloc.
We have given the community and the AES countries a transition period of 6 months, during which the ECOWAS mediators will continue their engagement.
Cyclone Chido pounds Mozambique's regional capital of Pemba. Namibia judges says that opposition parties can inspect election materials. Political analysts express mixed reactions to the Ethiopia-Somalia peace agreement. A Malawi inquiry ruled out foul play in the plane crash of late Vice President Chilima.
The crew opted to fly from Kia to Mzuzu using the direct route instead of using the normal route of W601. The crew did not obtain weather briefing for the route as required by aviation protocol.
And U.S. President-elect Donald Trump promises lower prices and increased oil production for the U.S. economy. The story plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has given the military-led countries of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger 6 months to reconsider their decision to leave the regional bloc. The decision came Sunday at the conclusion of an ECOWAS summit held in Abuja, Nigeria. The three countries formed their own confederation called the Alliance of Sahel States and were slated to withdraw on January 29, 2025. Abdel Fattahou Moussa is the ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security. He tells me that ECOWAS wants to give diplomacy one more chance.
The summit was a great success. All the major issues confronting ECOWAS and the West Africa region were discussed. But the elephant in the room is also the departure of the three countries of the Alliance of the Sahelian States, their departure from ECOWAS, and also the activation of the ECOWAS standby force to fight terrorism in the region.
You mentioned the elephant in the room. We know that Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger did not attend this summit. Mm-hmm. What happened to the diplomacy of the Senegalese president, Bassirou Diomaye Faye?
Listen, ECOWAS actually welcomed and commended the president of Senegal, His Excellency Diomaye Faye, for his engagement with the three countries wishing to leave ECOWAS. But the most important thing was about the approaching date of 29th of January 2025, when the AES countries are supposed to leave the community. On that score, the heads of state said they've taken note of the approaching date of the 29th of January 2025, and they decided to give a grace period of 6 months from 29th of January to the 29th of July to continue to pursue the diplomatic efforts that are being made. In the meantime, ECOWAS Commission has also been instructed to ready the contingency plans in order to ensure a smooth separation of the Alliance of Sahelian States from the ECOWAS.
Was there any optimism among the heads of state about the possibility that Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger might come back to ECOWAS?
Look, ECOWAS is still hopeful. ECOWAS is not just a group of heads of state or member states. ECOWAS is also a community. And whatever happens is going to impact community citizens in the region, which ECOWAS is loath of seeing the citizens of our region suffering because of this intended separation. That is why a 6 month transition period has been given after 29th of January to make sure that we agree on whether the three countries are coming back, and if they are not coming back, how we are going to put in place the contingency plans on the separation to make sure that it has the least impact on the citizens of the region.
Abdel Fattah Moussa is the Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. He was speaking with us from Abuja, Nigeria. Cyclone Chido, which pounded the island of Mayotte over the weekend and killed as many as 11 people, made landfall early Sunday in Mozambique. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province was hit hard. Spokesperson Guy Taylor tells me that communities in the regional capital of Pemba faced the prospect of being cut off from schools and health facilities for weeks.
So it made landfall this morning in the early hours of the morning, and it had arrived as an intense tropical cyclone, bringing very high winds, we think over or around 200 kilometres an hour, and a lot of rainfall. There has been serious damage to Pemba, and we're still assessing the condition of communities in the surrounding areas. Likely to be worse there because many of the structures are more rudimentary, made of bamboo or mud bricks. In Pemba, lots of homes and facilities with roofs torn off, some damage to structures and things, and some flooding as well caused by the rain. We don't have any figures yet on loss of life or injuries. UNICEF here. We have teams on the ground working together with other UN partners and supporting the government to bring life-saving supplies, affected people, things like water purification supplies, medications, prevention and treatment supplies for things like cholera. We're very worried about the potential spread of waterborne diseases like cholera and malaria with all the water.
What's causing the most damage? Is that the wind or the rain or the water?
Well, generally, the damage is done by the wind, and then the longer-term impact is due to the water. I don't think the flooding is quite as heavy as has been predicted, but there certainly is flooding. And that, of course, like I said, can lead to waterborne diseases. It can cut people off from accessing services, whereas the wind is more about, you know, causing injury to people, damaging homes and public infrastructure.
What do you know about what the damage also on Mayotte? What can you tell us what's happening there or what happened there?
I can't speak much to the situation on Mayotte because I work for UNICEF Mozambique, and our focus is on the situation in Mozambique, and we have, which will be responsible for Mayotte. I can only see really what has been reported on the news, and it looks like a pretty devastating impact on Mayotte from what I've seen, but not my area of expertise, really.
Do you find that these cyclones and these weather events are getting more violent?
They certainly are in Mozambique. I mean, Mozambique has been basically hammered by a cyclone pretty much every year for the past 5 or 6 years. We had Idai, we had Kenneth, we had Anna, Gombe, Freddy, and now Chido. And I was on the ground in 2023 when Cyclone Freddy hit east of Mozambique, the city of Kalimani. And yeah, I mean, I think there's a clear consensus that this is a result of, human glitch. Mozambique is one of the poorest countries in the world. Cabo Delgado and other provinces in northern Mozambique are generally amongst the poorest provinces in this country. And so they're really not well set up to deal with climate shock.
Guy Taylor is the spokesperson for UNICEF Mozambique. He was speaking with us from Pemba, the regional capital of Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. In Malawi, the findings of a commission of inquiry into the plane crash that killed Vice President Saulos Chilima and 8 others in northern Malawi in June has ruled out foul play. The commission presented its findings in a televised broadcast on Saturday evening, but some say the report has left most important questions unanswered. Lamek Mansina reports from Blantyre.
The report says the aircraft was in good condition and it had accumulated only 3,000 flight hours at the time of the accident. Justice Jabar Alide was chairperson of the commission. He said the plane crash was caused by the bad weather and that the flight crew or pilots erred for not checking the weather forecast on the route.
From the evidence before the commission, the crew opted to fly from Kia to Mzuzu using the direct route instead of using the normal route of W601. Having decided to change and use the direct route, the crew did not obtain weather briefing for the route as required by aviation protocols.
the military aircraft which carried Chilima and 8 others crashed in a forest in northern Malawi, where Chilima wanted to attend the funeral ceremony of a former cabinet minister, Rafael Kasambala. At the time of his death, Kasambala was one of the lawyers for the Chilima's party, the United Transformation Movement. Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera instituted the Commission of Inquiry in October following pressure from civil society organizations, politicians, and members of Chilima's family. However, the inquiry report comes after experts from the German Federal Bureau of Aircraft Investigation released preliminary findings in August of their probe into the plane crash. The BFU report raised safety concerns about the military plane, such as the absence of a cockpit voice recorder, which saves communication between pilots and airport traffic control officers. The BFU said the device could have provided crucial information regarding the cause of the crash. However, some analysts say although the new report by the commission helped clear up some issues surrounding the plane crash, it still leaves many questions unanswered. Michael Kayata is the executive director for the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation, which was among those pushing the independent probe into the plane crash. He says it's wrong to blame the pilots for the accident.
The question that we are raising is, if the pilots didn't seek that information, wasn't there anybody responsible enough to proactively provide that information to the pilots?
Kayata also says the report has a lot of inconsistencies. The commission said they will present the report to President Lazarus Chakwera soon. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blanta.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, December 16. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Two Namibian political parties scored a legal victory on Friday when three judges on the country's electoral court ruled that they can examine the electoral commission materials from last month's presidential and legislative election. Vitalio Angula has this report from Big Hook.
The two parties, the Independent Patriots for Change, or IPC, and the Landless People's Movement, or LPM, appear to be looking for evidence of irregularities in the elections that returned the Swapo Party to power. Opposition parties say voter turnout was suppressed in some areas due to a lack of ballot papers. But critics argue that even though there were widespread irregularities, they were of a logistical nature and cannot be seen as having affected the final election results. John Nakuta is a human rights lawyer and lecturer at Namibia's National University. Speaking to VOA at the courthouse Friday, Nakuta outlined what he believed the IPC and LPM are trying to accomplish.
So it is as if they want to inspect whether or not there indeed was irregularities. And thereafter, they would, I suppose, come back to the court to ask the court to nullify based on the evidence.
A spokesperson for the IPC, Ims Nashinge, says Friday's ruling is just a first step in a legal challenge that the party intends to bring to court in about a week.
We made it clear that we are not accepting anything from this sham of an election from day one. And our colleagues, other political parties such as PDM, UDF and others are in support with us. That's why you have seen, for example, on the day of the announcement, we have not attended.
At the courthouse, Elections Commissioner Pius Ikwambi said the commission had already reached an agreement with the aggrieved parties where they offered them the opportunity to inspect election materials, and this court process was just an affirmation of what they had already decided. Electoral Commission spokesperson David Siluka told VOA the political parties that object to the outcome of the elections are themselves to blame for failing to send representatives to the various polling stations to inspect the election process as it was being carried out. 22 parties contested the just-ended presidential and national assembly elections in Namibia. Of those, 13 managed to obtain seats in the 104-member National Assembly, where SWAPO holds a majority of 51 seats. The ruling Friday by the Electoral Court says the opposition parties can inspect the forms showing results from various polling stations. Critics say it is unclear what, if anything, the parties will be able to prove once they have done inspecting the documents. Vitalio Angula, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
The United Nations, the United States, European Union, and the African Union have all welcomed the agreement reached last week by the leaders of Ethiopia and Somalia in Turkey. Meanwhile, the deal has generated mixed reactions. Matt Bryding is a Horn of Africa analyst based in the region.
I think the Ankara Declaration between Ethiopia and Somalia is a positive step to the extent that the two leaders, Prime Minister Abiy and President Hassan Sheikh, met after a long period of not directly communicating, and to some extent simply by agreeing to talk and to try to engage one another on the differences between them, they've succeeded in somewhat de-escalating the tension between the two countries. But in terms of substance, the Ankara Declaration is very vague. It doesn't include any new commitments, nothing that hasn't been said by one side or the other outside the dialogue process or inside previous rounds of indirect talks. And so I think it's premature to expect any real thaw or breaking of the ice at this stage. Really, we have to see what the tangible outcomes of this agreement are going to be.
And what happens to the memorandum of understanding that Ethiopia signed with Somaliland?
The implications of the Ankara Declaration for the memorandum of understanding between Ethiopia and Somaliland, I think, are very much open to interpretation. There's nothing in the declaration that one side or the other has not said before, whether unilaterally or in the context of indirect talks that Turkey has mediated in the past. Prime Minister Abiy, in particular, has emphasized Ethiopia's commitment to the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Somalia. So it's not clear whether the Ankara Declaration is going to alter the MOU in any way. There's no explicit reference to it in the declaration. And for the time being, I think it's fair to assume that Ethiopia has not changed its position. It had quite a large delegation, quite a high-level delegation, attend the inauguration of the new Somaliland president on 12 December, which probably would not have been the case if Ethiopia's intentions had changed.
Matt Bryding is a Horn of Africa analyst. He spoke with viewers Haroon Marouf. The economy was one of the biggest issues for voters in this year's U.S. presidential election. As they await Donald Trump's return to power, many Americans say they expect improving the economy will be one of his first priorities. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Donald Trump's campaign focus on the economy carried through to his victory speech.
I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve.
A majority of voters said the economy and jobs were the most important issues in this election, says pollster Ashley Kierzinger.
With so many voters focusing on the economy, AP Vocast finds that the share of voters who say that their households' family finances are falling behind has increased from 4 years ago.
And on the economy, Kierzinger says, more people chose Trump. An overwhelming message from voters heard clearly on the losing side as well. Hakeem Jeffries leads Democrats in the House of Representatives.
They want us to focus on the issues that matter and to come together to solve problems for hardworking American taxpayers, beginning with lowering costs for everyday Americans struggling to live paycheck to paycheck.
In New Mexico, Judy Evans says she chose Trump because prices are too high.
Inflation has certainly affected me. My grocery bill has doubled in the last 2 years. My electricity and that sort of thing has gone up quite a bit.
In North Carolina, Aaron Anderson admires Trump's record on the economy.
Trump, he's going to get it fixed for us. It was running good when he was in here before, and get it back on track again.
Voter Charles Boudreau expects fast action from the new administration.
They'll have less regulations. They'll be spending more in their particular areas. People that'll have more money will spend more money in their particular areas. Gas prices will go down.
U.S. consumers may not see such quick change, says finance professor Michael Weber.
At the end of the day, a president in the short run, independent of who is in the White House, has very little grasp on economic policy in the very short run, but also in specifically on grocery prices, the price of the shelf we face in our daily lives.
Trump's economic plans include more oil drilling, lower taxes, and import tariffs, which most economists believe will result in higher prices for American consumers. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the Elite Club Cup competition on the continent, the CAF Champions League. The third round of the group stage of the competition delivered thrilling encounters, late drama and decisive victories across the continent this past weekend. South African side Mamelodi Sundowns claimed their first victory in the CAF Champions League group stage with a 1-0 triumph over Raja Casablanca on Sunday. The win moves Sundowns to the top of Group B on 5 points alongside FAR Rabat, who drew 1-1 with Maema Union on Saturday. Meanwhile, Joloba and Sagrada Esperanca played out a terse goalless draw in their Group D clash at the start 26 March on Sunday. Sudanese giant Al Hilal stunned MC Alger of Algeria 1-0 in Algiers on Saturday night to maintain their flawless start. In basketball news, Ferroviário do Maputo are the champions of the 2024 Women's Basketball League Africa. The Nasir Sali coach Mozambique side, who made a return to the African competition after missing out on last year's competition in Egypt, beat Al Hakli Sporting Club 81-72 to lift the title. Africa 2019 Most Valuable Player Ingvild Mukwaro put up a man of the match performance despite fouling out in the crucial last 2 minutes of the match to lead the team to victory with an 18 points, 7 rebounds and as many steals, adding 4 assists for a game high of 25 in efficiency. She described the victory as an emotional one for her side and her country, Mozambique.
I'm so proud of this team. I'm so proud of these people, these girls. It was a very hard game, strength from nothing. We just wanted to win. So I'm very, very proud of being part of this team. I'm very proud of being Mozambican. So this is for Ferroviário, this is for Mozambique.
And now to netball, where South Africa won both the men and women trophies at the 2024 African Netball Cup played in Namibia at the weekend. For the women's category, South Africa's Proteas overcame Uganda She Cranes 65-50 points. This was South Africa's fourth title following earlier triumphs in 2013, 2019 and 2021. South Africa's male netball team won the men's title after overcoming Eswatini 60-39 points. Cecilia Molokwane, the World Netball Director and African Netball President, said netball is growing in Africa.
And it really overwhelms me as a leader to see how netball has grown in Africa. And netball cannot grow if we don't have administrators within countries that will make it grow.
And finally, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame has affirmed his country's wish to return Formula One to Africa. The Rwandan head of state made the announcement of Rwanda's bid for a Grand Prix at the FIA General Assembly being hosted in the capital, Kigali. It is the first time the assembly has come to Africa. And that's it for these on this edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, December 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.